Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the disappointing loss against Concordia and what he expects against Rockford this week. He gives his thoughts on the new quarterback at Notre Dame University. And what does the coach think about getting married while you're in college? Let's find out on Muskies Matters. Well, let's welcome back head coach Colin Bruton. Coach, do you have any team updates for us?
Not a lot of team updates. Obviously, we're coming off a really disappointing loss and getting a chance to get back home. And I said this a lot this year, but just trying to get right and trying to get back to playing the way we're capable of playing and kind of the style that we want to play. Saturday we have a cancer awareness game on campus, so we're, a lot of things going on. It's a busy day for Lakeland Athletics. Our volleyball team, both our men's and women's soccer team, are home. We're home, so it's going to be a really busy, active day on campus, and kind of everybody celebrating a cancer awareness event. We're trying to raise awareness, but raise funds for breast cancer and just cancer in general. So that's going to be a really cool thing we got going on. And just a lot of excitement with that. It's kind of coming to that point in fall where it's starting to feel a little bit more like football weather, especially here in Wisconsin. I think it went from 72 to 42 in a day. So it's been pretty crazy, but it's going to feel a lot like football, and we're excited about that.
Well, let's start with last week's game, a tough loss for you. So what were your thoughts on the contest?
Yeah, I think Concordia played really well, and they deserve a lot of credit. They were it's a big rivalry game, and anytime you get a rivalry game, there's so much emotion in it. I thought they played with really an edge and some emotion, and I don't think our team really matched their intensity, and to some degree matched how much they wanted that win. We've held the trophy now for prior to Saturday for four straight years, and I think their kids, especially their upperclassmen and their coaching staff, did a really good job, and they just played with a different energy than we played with. Just felt like we were kind of one play away the whole game. It was 10-0 at the half, and we moved the ball. We threw an interception at the 4-yard line, and it just felt like we were kind of one play away. We needed one play that would kind of get us some momentum, and we never really had it. The game played out a lot differently than I think anybody expected. The previous week we scored 61, they scored 48, and I think the expectation going in is it was kind of going to be a back and forth. Kind of a shootout, and it didn't play out that way at all, and it kind of changed the way the game was played. They did a great job defensively, really against our run game. We didn't run the ball effectively. It was really disappointing in how we ran it, and they forced us to really play a lot more methodically than we want to play. And we moved the football. We had, I think, three drives of over 12 plays and gained yards, and we just couldn't make the big play. We weren't very good in the red zone. So it was just really, really disappointing. I've been at Lakeland now 12 years, and it was as disappointing a loss as I can remember, considering the circumstances, considering the cheese ball rivalry, and it was a tough one for us, and it's one that I think humbled our team and humbled our program, and we've told our guys all week, no one's going to feel sorry for us. We've had success. We were the team that was on top when we were the last, 4 years, really. We've been kind of the team to beat in the conference, and everyone takes a lot of joy in beating you now, and the only way we get better is by working. So that's kind of our focus now.
The defense allowed some yards, but played really well overall, I thought. Sam Bartlett in particular had a big game for you. It looks to me like this group is really beginning to define themselves.
Yeah, we're getting better. We've played better the last couple of weeks. I think our guys are getting more comfortable. We're starting three freshmen in the secondary. We're starting a freshman on the defensive line, and it's really a young group. And the exciting thing with our defense is we're only playing one senior primarily. We're starting, Deontay Moses at linebacker has been a difference-making player for us the last couple of years, but he's really the only senior. We have a couple of rotational defensive linemen that are playing, but really one senior starter at this point. And that group is just gaining confidence. They're getting more comfortable, kind of with what we expect and the effort level we expect. I think we're seeing a group that's growing up as we go. We've talked all week. We were starting a freshman quarterback making his first college start, and we talked all week about the challenge of just keeping us in the game, especially early. And I thought we did a good job of that. I think we had a turnover on special teams in the second half that led to a score, but I thought overall we played pretty well. So we're happy with how we're playing. Now we want to put it together. There's still plays here and there. There's still you know, some run fits that were wrong that led to a big run, or just some technique in the secondary. You know, both their touchdowns were third down passes and were things that we had seen on film, things that we were kind of expecting, and our technique just wasn't good, and we got beat by a senior receiver. Had a freshman corner get beat by a senior receiver in both situations, and it just small technique changes we got to make, but we're close, and that's the exciting thing, because I think we're very close to being a pretty good defense.
Who were your players of the game?
Yeah, you mentioned Sam. I thought Sam played really well, and him and Washington Vivanco, our two ends, have really come on the last couple weeks, and have really played good football. But I thought Sam Barber played well. I thought Jerry Stokes defensively played well. I thought Paul Sacedo, you know, one of our freshman corners, played well and did some good things. And you know, offensively, it's tough. You get shut out. There's not a whole lot of bright spots. You know, Dez Eddy still is a difference maker for us, and he's a guy that I think you know, teams you see a week in, week out, they're capping them, they're rolling coverage to him. You know, they're doing a lot of different things. He's kind of the guy that you see teams move their scheme towards. So I think, although he didn't maybe have the impact, you know, with yards and things like that, he's still impacting the game as a receiver. And I thought Aldrada Meeks, when he came in, ran the ball effectively. You know, so, but again, you know, you get shut out, there's not a whole lot of bright spots. And I don't want to pretend like it was a great offensive performance, because it wasn't. And same thing really with special teams. You know, we just got to shore some things up in that area, but we didn't have a ton of opportunities. You know, we had one kickoff. When you don't score, you don't kick off very often. We didn't have a field goal or extra point attempt, and you know, there wasn't a ton of special teams bright spots. We were, you know, we gave up two turnovers on special teams. So, like I said, we're really huge plays. We got to stop at 10-0 early in the second half. We muffed the punt, and then it went to 17-0, and we fumbled the ensuing kickoff. And you know, those two plays were huge plays in the game. You know, those two turnovers and the turnover, like I said, we threw a pick at the 4-yard line, and those three plays were probably the biggest plays of the game.
Is that one of those games where you look back on it now and you say to yourself, okay, we got a whole bunch of really bad stuff out of the way, so it's all kind of looking up from this point on?
That's the hope. You know, it felt like some of the stuff was forced by Concordia. Some of the stuff was, I think, us trying to do a little too much. You know, we had the muff punt. You know, we put Dez Eddy back and just trying to get a big play, you know, try to get our best athlete the ball. And he hasn't had a ton of opportunities returning punts. And you know, he muffed the punt. And it looked like he was a little indecisive about whether or not to try to field it or not. And at the last second, decided to try to field it. And, you know, we had a guy, you know, fumbling the kickoff. We had a safety that normally doesn't handle the ball. And there was a short kick. And he ended up fielding it and had a nice return, you know. But isn't a guy that's used to holding the ball. Isn't used to running with the football. And, yeah, it just felt like one of those games where we just couldn't get out of our own way. And you hope that at some point that flips. Like I told you, we've had a lot of really good luck and a lot of good injury luck, and we've reaped the benefits of some breaks the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, and it feels like, to some degree, we're kind of repaying that a little bit this year. And not that we're like a cursed team or anything like that, but that stuff seems to even out, you know. And there was a fumble early in the game on Saturday, and we recovered defensively and should have had the ball inside the 20, and the refs ruled that our player wasn't down with the ball and tried to advance it, and they got the ball back. And it wasn't a call I agreed with, but it's like those type breaks. You know, instead of having a first and goal, first down inside the 20, you know, instead, not only did they get the ball back, but they got the ball back with the first down because the refs ruled that we possessed the ball and tried to advance it, you know. So it's things like that. It just feels like, we didn't do a good job of creating breaks for ourselves. We didn't do a job of creating plays. But, yeah, it does feel to some degree like, you know, we had a lot of things go wrong on Saturday that hopefully we've gotten past.
You take on Rockford this week. They've lost 4 games in a row, but three of those 4 losses have been by 7 points or less. This looks like a team that really comes out to compete every Saturday.
They do. Coach Schroeder's done a really good job, down there since he's taken over. He's been down there, I believe, 4 years, but he's done a really good job. They're a team that plays hard. You know, they're competitive. They're a quality football team. It's a test. And, you know, from where they were when he took over, you know, 4 years ago to where that program is now, they've taken huge strides. And, you know, they've been competitive. I thought they had WLC, you know, they had them 17-3 in the fourth quarter and kind of let that one slip away. And Benedictine last week was another close game. And they turned it over a little bit against Benedictine. But they're a good football team. It's going to be a good test. They kind of force you to play their style. It seems like it kind of becomes a little more of a grinded out game, and they don't make quite as many big plays as a lot of teams in our league. They're not quite as explosive at times, but they force you to play their style, and they're really fundamentally sound. They're really sound defensively with their run fits and things like that. And you can just tell they understand their scheme very well. So it's a well-coached team. It's a team that has some really good players as well, and a program that really has gotten a ton better. They're a team that now every week, 4 years ago when they were before Jim took over, they were a team you looked at on the schedule and thought, like, hey, this is probably going to be a win. And I think most teams in our league probably thought that way. And now you play Rockford and you're going to have to play well. And that's a huge difference. It's a huge compliment to their staff.
Coming off being shut out, what do you look to see for your offense to establish itself in this game?
Yeah, I wanted to see us run the football. We have not run the football consistently, at least last week, and that was disappointing. I want to see our offensive line really come out and play well. I want to see us get back to kind of our base rules. Our base rules are really playing numbers, looking to throw the wide receiver screen game, looking to run the football off of that. And then I want to see us make some more big plays. I think we have some really good athletes that are close. We just haven't broken that tackle to make a 10-yard play, a 50-yard play. And I think some of that's on our athletes. We got to take some more downfield shots, but we also need our guys to make those plays when they get in the second level. So we're expecting our offense to play much better, and we're excited about that. I think we've been so good offensively for a number of years now. When we had Michael and we had all the guys we had the last couple of years, that when our offense struggles, it really affects our team, and I thought that was part of Saturday. Was when our offense struggled, our guys emotionally didn't respond. It was kind of like shocking to see our offense not putting up huge numbers, and we got to get back to making plays and getting the ball in space to our athletes.
Well, let's head to fan questions this week. We start with Carl, who says, "I know that if a player transfers from Division I school to another, he has to sit out a year. Do they have to do that in Division III as well?"
They do not. So in Division III, no scholarships, so you're allowed to transfer. As long as you transfer from a D3 to a D3, you're fine to play the next year. Some conferences will have restrictions based on the conference. You can't transfer from a conference school to a conference school, things like that. But overall, with the NCAA, there's no restrictions on transferring in Division III.
Is that in the NAC? Do they have rules like that at all or no?
They do not. So in the NAC, you're allowed to transfer from school to school. Obviously, I think it's a little different when you're transferring in conference. We would really really want to vet a guy if we were going to take a transfer from a conference school. I'd make a phone call to the head coach and just see what the situation was at the previous school and see why the kid's leaving. And we're not going to – I don't think anyone in the NAC is recruiting off anybody else's roster or anything like that. But, with the schools being somewhat geographically located pretty close to each other, if you're a kid that's at – a school in the NAC, and you're looking to transfer, other NAC schools are probably schools that are appealing. So it happens from time to time, but it doesn't happen a ton.
Next up is Mike, who says, "Do you think it is fair that coaches are fined for criticizing bad officiating during games?"
I don't know if it's necessarily fair. I do think it is probably necessary to keep coaches from criticizing officials after every game. I think officials, they do the best job they can. I think a lot of them are really good. Some weeks are not very good, but I think generally they're very good. And I think if you didn't find them, especially at the level where there's the amount of press coverage in Division I or at the NFL level, you'd see a lot more officials being criticized. It'd be a lot harder job to do for the officials. So I think I understand why they do it. I also think there's sometimes when coaches are absolutely correct in their criticisms, and it's tough to see a guy get fined or get penalized when he's correct. So I see it both sides. I understand why they have the rules, but I also think that coaches should be allowed to point out when there's mistakes made.
I think that they should allow like 5 minutes after every game for a refs to get together in a room and a coach could just let them have it and then step out and it'd be all over.
That would probably work. That would be effective.
Tyler would like to know, how do you think some teams are able to take players that have troublesome pass and get them to fall in line when their previous organizations had no such success?
I think a lot of that's just about the culture within your program. Are you doing things to try to build into these guys that have had trouble past you, doing things to try to help them change their character, help them make, you know, better decisions. And I don't think it's necessarily a leniency. I think sometimes when those guys come to the right organization, the right program, it's very firm. You know, the expectations are set very firmly. But there's a culture. There's a culture within the players. There's a culture within, you know, kind of everybody that's within that program that sets a standard, saying this is what we're about, and this is what you're going to have to do to have success here, and this is what you're going to have to kind of the line you're going to have to tell. So I think it has to be intentional. It has to be something that's talked about, and I think you build your culture the way you want to build it. And I think some places probably just don't want to deal with the headaches, and other places are willing to take a chance on a guy and help try to reform them and get them, you know, get them going in the right direction.
You know, I wonder, because when I read this question, I thought of the Josh Gordon situation there in New England, and I wonder, yeah. Like, from your standpoint, because you've had so much success as being conference champions over all 4 or 5 seasons here now, do you think that instantly kind of gives you greater leverage with a player like that, just because, hey, we came here to win, and if you're not here to win, go home?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we have a lot of kids on our roster that are really good, you know, really good people, but we also have, you know, we probably take on more kids from Trouble Pass and other programs. We have kids that are, we have a lot of, you know, inner city kids. We have a lot of kids that come from single parent households. We have kids that, you know, it's just different. You know, we don't have as many kids that come from a high level of fluency, you know, financial means and things like that. So we certainly get really good kids, and we vet that. But I think we also know that we have some guys that maybe haven't had the guidance. They haven't had the parental guidance, for instance, that other kids have had. And I think for us, it's just being very intentional with how we treat those kids. And a lot of times I think if you give people respect and you treat them the right way and you show them that you really care about them as a person, they're willing to then meet you halfway, if that makes sense. They're willing to kind of toe the line. They're willing to do the things they need to do. But, yeah, I think it's also you set a standard and say, hey, this is what we're willing to accept. And this is what we're not willing to accept. And if you're very clear with that and kids know that and they want to be a part of something, you know, that they're going to have to toe the line. They're going to have to make those changes if they want to be a part of it.
Phil says, this kid, Ian Books, looks like he could be a savior of sorts for Notre Dame.
Yeah, he looks really good. It's been fun to see that the kind of the growth of that program. I think they got a good shot at the playoffs, and with them being on at night the last couple of weeks, been able to see them play, and I think they look pretty good. So, I don't know if anybody's beaten Alabama, but yeah, you kind of wonder why this kid was on the sideline so long. You know, with the way he's been playing, and seems like he's a good athlete. He throws an accurate ball, and they just seem so much more explosive offensively with him in the lineup. So that's been cool to see.
He'll be a great quarterback for Coach Bruton when he takes over at Notre Dame.
Absolutely. We'll take him if he wants to transfer. He can transfer down without sitting out.
Gerald says, Coach, it is good to see that despite you not wanting to be a Packer fan, that you at least are with the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm on the Brewers bandwagon, I guess. I'd like to see them win. You know, I think it's cool. A cool story for Milwaukee, but you know the Yelich kid just seems to be a great kid. He's obviously hitting the hell out of the ball, so it's been fun to watch. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, I don't want to say a true underdog story. I think there was some expectations for the Brewers this year, but I certainly don't think there was the expectation that they were going to be in the NLCS and all that. So rooting for them, you know, hopefully that appeases the Wisconsin listeners and the Wisconsin students here, and we'll keep it with the Brewers.
We have a couple of questions from Todd. The first is, what age do you think is appropriate to start playing football?
You know, I think it's some degree an individual decision. I started at the age of 9 and played, and I think at that time it was a little different. You know, I think now the rules are so much better with the amount of contact you can have, you know, the amount of contact in practice, the amount of hitting, how you practice, things like that. It's so much better now. You know, I remember when I first started playing, we do, you know, felt like an hour of tackling drills a day, and you'd be 10 yards apart, and you're running, you know, in a sprint at another kid, and you're just hitting each other, and it didn't make any sense. So I think there should be a level of, a level of confidence that parents should have that if their kids are playing youth football now, it's done better. And that doesn't mean that every organization is doing it perfectly, but I think it's done better with most youth organizations. That being said, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, we're going to wait till our child is in high school, you know, to be a freshman and start playing, and maybe he's playing in flag leagues or different things like that, or we're going to wait till 7th or 8th grade. I think that's probably the right time, sometime between 7th grade and freshman year, if it's something you want to do. You know, there's so many great things about playing football and playing football at a young age, but you just got to make sure that the organization is doing things the right way.
Todd would also like to know if you think it is appropriate for girls to play football.
Sure, why not? I mean, if they're physically able to play and they're physically able to protect themselves and compete, and you know, I think sometimes you know, not to make an overgeneralization, but I think there's some strength differences and things like that. But if a girl is you know, able to protect herself, I'd have no problem, you know, having a girl on our roster. You know, I know there's been girls that have kicked and done things like that. You're starting to see more and more girls that, you know, that are playing different positions. And again, if you're a good enough athlete to do it, sure. I see absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Next up is Quinn, who would like to know, are you a fan of the Electoral College?
You know, I see the purpose of the Electoral College. I think there's, you know, in 2018 with the ability to, you know, have a true popular vote where the person who gets the most votes in the country, you know, wins the presidency, that seems to make sense to me at this point. You know, I also understand the idea that you know, a presidential candidate could potentially win 7 states or whatever it is and win the presidency without the Electoral College if they were able to, you know, secure votes in Texas and California and New York and things like that. So I get the idea of trying to appease kind of the middle of the country and more rural areas and things like that. I don't like the idea that, you know, you could win Nebraska by 1,000 votes, you know, and win all the votes in Nebraska, or I could win California, obviously a much more populous state, by 30% of the votes, and it doesn't seem to be equal representation. So I'd like to see it. I guess I think in 2018, I think it's time to do away with the Electoral College, but I guess I see the purpose and why. I can understand the other side of the argument.
Gabriel would like to know, have you had issues with your kids hating a particular subject, and what do you do to try to change their attitude about it?
Not too much. So our oldest, Colton, is a really good student. He had conferences this morning, and is doing very well. He struggles with spelling right now. That's kind of the issue that he struggles with. Is not a very good speller. I guess with spell check and everything else he faces, it's probably not as big an issue. I don't think he's going to be on the Scripps Spelling Bee competition or anything like that in the next couple of years, but he's in fourth grade now and you know, really enjoys school. And we've been fortunate with that he really enjoys school. And, you know, our younger boy, Kanan, has just started 3K, and he loves school, loves going to school. I don't know what he's learning or what he's doing in 3K. It seems like they have a lot of recess and snack time, which is fine. So we haven't had that issue. You know, I think part of it, I think, for kids is just making them see how it's applicable. You know, I think there's kids, math seems to be the one that, you know, kids really struggle with math, and trying to make it as applicable as possible to their life, I think is important. So I haven't had a huge issue with that, and hopefully we won't in the future.
Olivia would like to know, she says, I read that many in this younger generation are against the idea of getting married. Do you think that there are some clear advantages in being married in college if you have found the right person?
So I don't know where Olivia stances on marriage young. I'm going to go ahead and make, I guess, a controversial statement. I don't think anyone should get married in college. I don't think anyone, I think it's really hard to know if you found the right person when you've had such limited life experience. And I feel pretty strongly on this one. I see some of our players, and they've been, you know, dating the same girl since high school, and now they're a sophomore or junior in college. And I really struggle with the idea that you know, they've had one serious girlfriend in their life, you know, and I think I just don't know if that person's had enough life experience to be able to say, hey, this is the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with. Now, I understand that that's a controversial take. I understand that there's people that married their high school sweetheart or married their college boyfriend or girlfriend and had a very, very happy life, I would just strongly, strongly advise waiting, and get out of college, experience kind of the challenges of real life, of having a job, of having a career, of being outside of your your friend circle, and see if this is the person that you still want to marry. College is great. It's very different than the next 60 years of your life. So I would tell Olivia, if she's thinking about getting married or thinks she's found the right person, to wait. And if it's the right person, they're going to be around in 4 or 5 years anyway, and that's a great time to get married. I think mid to late 20s, early 30s is a great time to get married and settle down and start having a family.
Lynn would like to know, are you able to even watch ESPN? They become so insufferable.
Yeah, I don't... if there's a game on ESPN, I'm watching ESPN. So I understand there's a big backlash nowadays towards ESPN, and I don't necessarily understand it. I think there's been some political issues with ESPN where people believe that, athletes or sportscasters are not supposed to weigh in on political events, and I don't necessarily agree with that. And I think there's still people that still have a platform if they want to talk about those issues. I don't have an issue with that, but. So I don't know. I'm watching it. If there's a game on Fox, I'm watching Fox. If there's a game on ABC, I'm watching ABC. I'm watching where the sports are. So if that's ESPN, I'm turning in.
Brad would like to know what your favorite Mel Brooks film was.
Not a huge fan of the Mel Brooks movies. I'd probably go Spaceballs is my favorite. Used to think Spaceballs was really funny at a younger age. Now, as I've watched those movies back, I've seen Blazing Saddles a few times, I've seen Spaceballs. I don't think they stand up quite as well as some of the other comedies, but I think that's true. I think I've said this on this podcast before. I think that whole generation of films, the Animal House, the Caddyshack, all those movies, I just don't think hold up quite as well as some of the other comedies. So I'll go Spaceballs is my favorite, but I wouldn't say it's a huge favorite of mine.
Brad would also like to know, do you think a film like Blazing Saddles could even be made today with this country being so overly sensitive about everything?
That's a great question. We in the office here, most of our coaches, we're pretty big fans of The Office. So we had a long conversation about The Office a couple weeks ago about whether or not, The Office only being 10 years old and some of the sexual harassment stuff they had and some of the jokes that they would make on that show, would that be on TV, in 2018? And I don't know. I was kind of making the argument, and some of my staff agreed, some of them didn't. I think some of them probably agreed just because they know I'm the boss. But, there was some debate about whether or not, some of the things that Michael Scott would say on that show, for instance, would be made today. And I think it's tough. I think it's definitely changing, and I think what people are so easily offended these days, and sometimes I think when something's clearly comedy and clearly trying to be satirical, that we should be allowed to let things go a little bit. But I think some people just want to find a reason to be offended. I think sometimes it's people are offended, and sometimes people want to find a reason to be offended. So I don't know if it'd be made today. I think it probably would be made, but it wouldn't look exactly the way it looks now, or looked in the 70s or 80s.
Very well said. And we end with, why is it good to be a Muskie?
It's good because we get to play a game on Saturday. We get a chance to make things right. We get a chance to compete again. And we talked to our guys this week about the opportunity to play football and what that means, and really embracing that, embracing the chance that you get to practice, not that you have to practice. You get to be a part of this team, not that you have to be a part of the team. And that's exciting. We get a Rockford team here that's coming in. We know it's going to be a competitive game, and we know we're going to have to play well. But, we're back at home. We feel very comfortable playing in our home field. It's going to be an exciting day on campus with all the campus events and, like I said, all the home games. So it's just good to get a chance to be a football player, to be blessed to be playing and coaching college football and getting a chance to compete again.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
I appreciate it, Rob.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Tuesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.